I'm delighted now to welcome Bill McDonald. He's founder of the Malpai Borderlands Group. He's a fifth-generation rancher in southeastern Arizona along the Mexican border, and he is a longtime participant in the Quivira Coalition. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Oh, thank you very much.
So you coined the term the radical center, which seems like kind of an oxymoron. To describe, well, tell us what that term means.
Well, the first time I used the term, I had walked into a room where I saw against the wall there was some people with a table that said cattle free by 93. And in the same room, there were a couple of folks wearing cowboy hats and cowboy boots. And I thought, how interesting that we would have these two groups in the same room. And I mentioned that it was a radical idea that people would get together and we must be in the radical center. And that really caught on. I mean, I had people from both sides coming up to me afterwards saying, somebody should have said this a long time ago.
I mean, it's amazing that they all got together in the same room.
Well, and that credit goes to the organizers, but I'm not sure that they knew when they were coming who else was going to be there.
So, for you as a rancher, and we talk at this conference, a lot of people are talking about new methods of ranching and the Allen Savory method of moving cattle and bunching them together and so on. You're a fifth generation rancher. Did you see problems in the way that your father, grandfather, and so on was doing things?
Not so much my grandfather or my father. I think that the biggest impact, negative impact of ranching was probably in the late 19th, early 20th century when you had open range and you didn't have any rules. Basically, people were homesteading. They only had 160 or at the most 640 acres of land to deal with. Range land, that's nothing in the Southwest. So you had all this unclaimed land that was out there, and if you didn't graze your cattle on it, somebody else did. And it was devastating, to have that many cattle on it day after day, year after year. Sooner or later, you're going to hit a drought, and then you have plants die. And so cattle grazing got off to a rather bad start, I guess, ecologically, you might say. I think we've come a long way since then, and I think that we're still not doing it perfectly, just like my grandfather didn't do it perfectly, but I think we've learned a lot, and certainly the country's in a lot better shape than it was then.
How have your own practices changed and those of your fellow ranchers in the region?
Well, for one thing, we're working together now, and we're seeing that, for instance, in our watershed work, what I do on my ranch is going to affect the ranch below it, next to it, and we share. For instance, if we put on a prescribed burn, we try to include as many ranches as want to be involved, and that involves having to time your grazing so that you're not needing the grass, the feed, which is otherwise fuel for the fire at the time that it burns and until it recovers. So I think the biggest change in our area is we're all working together.
Are you able to find consensus with each other in the ways that you work and in the changes that you make and the prescribed burns and those kinds of things?
Yeah, and I think one of the ways we do that is we just look for somebody that agrees with us on something and we work with them. We don't spend a lot of time trying to convince someone who doesn't think something's a good idea that it is. We simply go out and we do it and we demonstrate whether or not it's a good idea. And if we have success, we get more converts and we're able to work with more folks. And it's that way of doing things has worked quite well for us over the last 20 years.
What is the nature of your relationship with people who are from the environmental movement who have been traditionally anti-grazing, anti-cattle in the first place?
Well, we started off with folks who were in that category. I won't say they were radically in that category, but they certainly had their doubts about grazing, especially grazing on public lands. Some of those folks are still working with us, and I'll be the first to tell you, not everybody does a great job of grazing, and poor grazing management is still a concern. But if it's done right, it's a great way to maintain open space and maintain healthy landscapes, and I think a lot of those folks recognize that now.
Let's talk about the public and private land. I mean, you have a lot of people you're overseeing in the Malpai Borderlands Group. I think a majority of privately owned land, if I'm correct.
Well, yeah, the area is about 59% private land, but a lot of that is on one big ranch. If you get on the smaller ranches, for instance, my ranch is 90% state and federal lease, 10% private land. Now, the private land is in areas that have the best water, so I mean it's very critical to the operation of the ranch, but that's not unusual in the West to have small amounts of private land with water on it, and then large amounts of federal land or state leased land. And again, that goes back to the Homestead Act, when people would homestead around the best waters, and then they'd use the rest of the country.
Now, are you able to do, for example, holistic range management on public land?
I know people that have done it, but it's difficult. The public lands are, I don't want to say they're hidebound, but they don't change easily. And they have prescriptions for when your cattle are supposed to be on and when they're supposed to be off. And if you want to do things differently, it can be difficult. So a lot of people don't even bother, and they do the innovation on their private land, and then they hope that one day, the public lands are going to come around. And that's not always the case, but unfortunately it is in a lot of cases.
So, how are the public lands faring? I mean, we have this history of overgrazing in the West and in dry lands, high desert, and so on. How are they doing at this point in history?
I'm probably not the best person to judge it. I think that the problem on public lands is a gridlock that's been created by some well-meaning environmental laws that probably need to be looked at again, reformed, not thrown out. You don't throw out the baby with the bathwater, but made more workable, and a little bit less incentive for people to sue on relatively frivolous grounds in some cases, and keep things tied up, and keep the folks that work in these agencies beleaguered and intimidated to some extent. There's not a lot of incentive to try to do anything creative on public lands. The safest thing in many cases is to do nothing. And people will tell you, when you're working with a changing environment and the climate is changing, and everything changes in nature, that doing nothing is sometimes the worst thing that you can do.
What kind of changes would you like to see in the way public land is managed and in the interaction that private landowners have, like yourself, who are grazing on both public and private land?
Well, I think that what our group has done been a good start, in that we're trying to take leadership role. There are a lot of people within the public lands, both on the federal and state level, who are very happy to work with us in a partnership mode. Of course, Natural Resources Conservation Service does that and has for years. But unfortunately, they're kind of being pushed in a regulatory mode. There is a constant inertia, it seems, in government to want to be in control. And I think they need to let go of that a little bit, and they need to give people a chance to maybe make mistakes, not big mistakes, not mistakes that are going to be catastrophic, but to try different things. And if they don't work, try something else, as long as it's done, with good intent. And right now, I don't think in most cases we're at that in that situation. There are a few unique places, and Malpai may be one of them, where you can do some of those things because of the track record that we've had. But we have to constantly work to maintain that, because the inertia is always in the other direction.
What are some of the things that Malpai Borderlands Group has done that you're most proud of and that you'd like to tell people about?
Well, I think getting fire back into the landscape, and I know that may be alarming to some people. They think in terms of, these huge fires, that crown fires that burn up all kinds of habitat and other things. Well, that's not the case where we are. We're trying to get fire back in the landscape to get some equilibrium between grass and woody species, because the brush was crowding out the grass. And we've been very successful in getting fire back in. The other thing that I'm really proud of is the amount of land that we've protected permanently from development. But probably the thing that I'm most proud of is the fact that people can come to the Malpai group to work things out. We have a demeanor and a way where you can just sit down, you can say whatever you want to say. Nobody's going to shout at you. Nobody's going to try to shout you down or tell you you're wrong. We'll sit there and we'll try to figure out some way to satisfy everyone's needs in a reasonable manner. And I guess that's what the Radical Center is.
The Malpai group did an exchange program with Maasai tribesmen. You said a beautiful thing. You said you've never felt more at home than you did when you were in East Africa. What did you mean by that?
It just reminded me so much of home. The big, wide open spaces. The Maasai made an interesting comment when they visited our country, and I hadn't been over there yet. But they said, "Where are the animals?" And they didn't mean the cattle; they meant the wildlife. And yeah, I said, "Well, gosh, we got lots of wildlife." But when you go to Africa, you see the wildlife. I mean, they're big herds, big animals. And I came home, and I felt like, you know, they're right. The landscape looks kind of empty. And I think back to the time when we had mammoths and mastodons and saber-toothed tigers and those kinds of things, and I wonder whether, you know, our cattle play some kind of role in terms of the type of animal impact that these big landscapes really do need. It was just very interesting to be there. Of course, they don't have the cold, they don't have the seasons that we have in the United States. They're right on the equator there, or close to it. But they have the mountains, they have the grasslands, they have a great love for their animals, whether both wild and domestic. They live with nature. I just felt really at home with those folks.
One thing that I've heard over and over again is that people who are managing for biodiversity have not only more fertile and productive rangelands for their cattle, but other wildlife start showing up. Have you seen that?
Yeah, we have. Nobody had seen Aplomato falcons out there for years, and they're starting to show up. The jaguar, you know, nobody had photographed a jaguar in the United States ever, and we've photographed two there now. I think we are, in spite of the fact that we've been in a 20-year drought, we have demonstrated that the practices that we have are attractive to wildlife. Yeah.
And have you been able to mitigate the effects of that drought through the kind of land management that you do?
Right. I think that the fires and some of the water development we've done, some of the watershed work we've done has all helped keep a little bit more moisture in the ground. I'm really surprised that we didn't lose more grass than we did during these droughts. And nobody went broke. We all made it through the drought. So I think, you know, we did a lot of things in terms of getting people some resources that they needed when they needed them. The use of conservation easements and paying people for conservation easements helped get some people out of financial bind that they were able to then do what they needed to do to get through the drought. I think that our actions did make a difference.
Bill McDonald is founder of the Malpai Borderlands Group. He's a fifth-generation rancher in southeastern Arizona. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.